How are music therapists changing the lives of people in Canada?
What is the latest research and trends?
You are tuned into the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast,
and we will explore these questions with our guest today.
Let's get started.
Welcome to the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adrian and Kathy. On today's show, we're speaking with Annabelle Brault, who shares with us about her journey to becoming a music therapist, along with why she has chosen to focus her published research around clinical work with informal caregivers. Annabelle also tells us more about why she has chosen to study digital well-being as part of her doctoral work.
And here's a little more about Annabelle. She is a resource-oriented music therapist, musician, researcher, and educator. She's an artist member for the Center for the Study of Learning and Performance at Concordia University and the French content editor for the Canadian Journal of Music Therapy. She provides music therapy services in person and online in various community organizations and institutions in the Greater Montreal area, as well as professional music therapy supervision at the National Institute for Music Therapy. Annabelle is a PhD candidate at Concordia University, investigating the potential of musicking for exploring digital well-being issues in post-secondary students. Other research interests include the use of music technology as a creative medium to instill social change, as well as resource-oriented approaches in clinical and educational contexts. Annabelle teaches both in-person and online learning in the Creative Arts Therapies Department at Concordia University, and most recently in the Department of Music Research at McGill University's Schulich School of Music.
Welcome to the podcast, Annabelle. We're excited to have you here from Montreal.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start out by talking about your journey to becoming a music therapist. Particularly, how did you become involved with teaching and research?
Certainly. I did my studies at the University of Windsor. So I did a Bachelor of Music Therapy. I wasn't sure what I was going to do before that. I did a lot of traveling, and all while traveling, music was always a way that allowed me to connect with people despite cultural differences, despite language differences, and that really interested me. And so that led me to do some studies in music therapy. And after I did my bachelor at the University of Windsor, I went on to do my master's at Concordia University. And just a year after graduating, I had the opportunity to get involved with teaching at Concordia University in the program that I taught and the graduate diploma as well. And so that was kind of a scary experience in the sense that I was quite fresh as a music therapist, but I had a really strong interest in teaching and I was given this opportunity, and it's really shaped who I am as a music therapist and as a person too, I would say, because I've done it for quite a few years now. And so as I started to do some teaching, I did full-time teaching in both programs, as I mentioned, I had some opportunity to start doing some research, and this led eventually to starting my doctoral studies.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And so how did it feel really starting out and just being a new music therapist, but being a professor at the same time?
Yeah, it feels a little bit, fake it till you make it.
Right.
In the sense, I really had to, I worked really hard to feel confident when I came into the classes. And also, and that also involved like also being okay with saying like, that's a really good question. Let me look into this and I'll get back to you, when I wasn't able to answer the questions that students would come up with. And so it involved a lot of hard work and just like really getting familiar with our literature, really getting familiar with areas that perhaps I didn't have necessarily clinical experience in, and dig in and really learning from the students as well, who would bring in like really rich experiences from their practicum and their life as well. You know, we have students that, you know, come with all sorts of life experiences, and so they could really harness that in the context of the classroom.
That's amazing. And so you had an interest in teaching and then in research. Can you tell us a little bit more about the research piece?
Yeah, so when I did, when I was doing my studies at the University of Windsor, I did a little bit of assistantship here and there, research assistantship. And then I did my master's. And again, I had some opportunities to assist in some of the research that was going on at the time. And I did my master's involved a thesis. So in my thesis, I did a philosophical inquiry where I looked at the way we approach the work of music therapy in pediatric oncology. So this particular sort of theoretical research didn't involve like human participants, but it really really started my interest around, you know, like thinking more deeply about the way we approach the work and kind of the contributions that are possible when we look at things formally the way we do it in a research context.
Oh, that's great. And then the second question I have for you is, can you share more about your clinical approach and your work with informal caregivers?
Yeah, so that's been a really dear sort of area of clinical specialization for me. So I've been working with informal caregivers for quite a while, at least 5 years, I think. And informal caregivers are just people, they can be family members, friends, they can be acquaintances that take on vital caring roles in the lives of people who need that. And so I've been working with a community organization for about 5 years. And it started as group in-person sessions. And during the pandemic, we transitioned online and have remained online ever since. And in my work with them, we really focus on ways music can be used in everyday life to improve health and well-being. So it's a very sort of practical approach. I function a lot from a resource-oriented perspective. So that's based in the work of Russ Pure and a lot of other music therapists. After that, that was also the theoretical orientation I took in my master's thesis, and it's been important ever since. And there are four sort of main tenets to that approach. The first one is to always nurture the strengths and resources of the individuals. So in the sessions I have with caregivers, we speak, of course, of the difficulties that they encounter in their everyday life and in the challenging role of being a caregiver, but also of all their strengths and resources in engaging in that role and in other areas of their life, because they're full humans. That's not the only thing that they do. We also, in a resource-oriented context, want to make sure we view individuals within their context. And so, for example, we'll talk a lot about their experience of the healthcare system. And again, that may not be the first thing that comes to your mind is like, well, that's a great thing to talk about to make people feel better, because oftentimes people have fairly traumatizing experiences with their healthcare system. But understanding how it works, understanding how people access resources is really important in understanding their experience as a caregiver. And within the group, this is also an area where the members have gained expertise. Right. So people who've been caregiver for 20, 30 years that have gone through all sorts of, you know, challenges and victories in navigating the system are able to resource each other, which has been really, really beneficial for everybody in the group. So that's the second tenet. A third tenet is collaboration rather than intervention. And so, again, like that can look like involving the participants in deciding the types of goals we want to work on in the therapeutic space. It also involves sort of really keeping in mind the agency of the participants and not necessarily viewing ourselves as, you know, knowing more than or better than, right? They are the expert of their reality. Even though I have some caregiving experiences, I cannot pretend that I know what it's like for them. And I don't know everything about the relationship they have with the person they care for. And so collaborating with them to understand their needs and their strengths is really, really key. Mm. And then the last one, which I would say is, you know, like throughout the whole process, is viewing health as a health and well-being resource. And so for that, I will, every session, give very practical means of infusing more music in their lives. So that can look like, you know, we might do something like creating music relaxation videos that I then will make available on a private YouTube link. And then that's something that they can use in their everyday life. It can be like something like showing how to use writing to music to process feelings. It can be encouraging or sharing a musical and artistic event that are going on in our community, and encouraging them to go and get involved with the arts and see what that looks like when they do it for themselves or even with the person they care for. And so those are just examples of, you know, practical things that we talk about and we sort of practice. I really think about music therapy sometimes too as this like sort of rehearsal space where we can, you know, practice the skill of using music and its potential in our lives.
I love the way you describe that. And Annabelle, you are a natural teacher, and that is so evident in the way that you've just so clearly described your resource-oriented approach. And I think many, many people listening will be resonating. Yes, that is such, but you know, really describing those four tenets is really helpful.
I mean, I remember when I discovered it, it was like, what? Like, yes, that makes so much sense to me. You know, I think some of it too is like finding something you really deeply connect with and that aligns with like your worldview and your values and all of that. So yes, I hope people will relate to it for sure.
Yeah, no. And it really paints a clear picture of what it is that you're doing, supporting informal caregivers in this way as well. So I have another question for you. What sparked your interest in studying digital well-being as part of your doctoral work? And how do you see music in contributing to our understanding of this?
Yeah, so, you know, I talk about informal caregivers, and digital well-being might come out of the blue for listeners right now.
Yes, true.
I mean, for sure, like all of you, like I was pretty stunned when the pandemic happened, and all of a sudden in myself, I was doing full-time teaching, and within 2 weeks I had to, you know, pivot completely everything I was doing online. And it was just like mind-blowing and incredibly difficult. And I was spending like incredible amounts of hours in front of my screen, and like having sometimes issues with just regulating my emotions while I was online, and just like having to adapt to so much new things so quickly. And so digital well-being really refers to people's ability to live a good life in a world that's marked by digital communication and technology. So that includes social media and AI and pretty much, you know, GPS, pretty much anything you can think of that involves technology. And so those were present before the pandemic, but the pandemic really, really served as a catalyst and really forced a lot of people to kind of jump on the bandwagon, even if before they might have had a fairly detached sort of life with regards to technology. And so that's one of the things. I think also like becoming a mother and knowing that my child is going to grow up in a world that I can't even imagine yet what that's going to be like in terms of how it's going to be intertwined with technology. And so that's another thing. And then another sort of reason that got me interested in this is I got involved with the project called Landscape of Hope. And that's an important collaboration that involves the use of digital arts to explore narratives of resilience with regards to discrimination and cyberbullying. So that's the work of some of my close colleagues at Concordia, Dr. Vivek Venkatesh and Owen Chapton, and many, many other collaborators. And so I got involved with this sort of collective back in 2019, and that really got me interested in learning more about cyberbullying and the ways the arts can help us make sense of these really complex phenomenon. And I guess that led me to my research question, which is really to examine and understand the impact of musicking on perceptions of digital well-being. And I'll be working with university students, as is a fairly convenient sort of sample, but also an interesting one because most university students are emerging adults, and technology plays a very interesting role in that, in this very critical part of people's development. And so musicking, to me, is a very interesting method and almost methodology in this context, because I think it will allow me to really dig deeper in these complex experiences that are hard to explain in words. Another reason why I think musicking will be interesting in this research is because it is something that's embodied, right? When we engage in music making, which to me, I include listening in music making, because the act of listening is incredibly creative. It involves our bodies, right? And especially when we're online, there's often this illusion, I would say, that we're quite detached from our body. Like when we think about online, it happens somewhere in the air. but it doesn't, right? Like the technology we use is very much physical. The technology we use very much has an ecological footprint. There's all of these things that I think musicking can help us sort of dig into a little bit deeper. So I'm using an arts-based methodology that focuses on musicking to explore that question.
Wow. Okay. That is really interesting. And I really appreciate how your own personal lived experiences influence that and influence the decisions you're making around moving into your research. Okay. So this is just like a curious question.
Yes.
So you're pursuing your PhD at Concordia. What does the timeline look like for your study? Like your research, are you already recruiting or like just, you know, curious about those details a little bit, if you can answer.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were mentioning that, you know, like it's nice that my topic is related to my personal experiences and interests. It has to, when you do something like a PhD that lasts so long, it has to be something you really have a deep passion for because it's hard. So right now I've completed my comprehensive examination in the fall and I've submitted my research proposal to my committee and I should hear in just a week whether they like what I've proposed, and I'm hoping to do my data collection this summer. So it's moving along quite well. I'll be obtaining some my ethics approval before obviously collecting data with humans, but that's like where I'm at. So hoping to collect this summer and start analyzing this summer my findings.
Excellent. And congratulations on completing all of those steps along the way. It is such a tremendous undertaking. And yeah, it really does have to be something you feel passionate about, which clearly you do. Okay, I have one more question about that. So yes. I'm wondering, in the summer when you're collecting data with a human student participant, what might that look like? Like what might a musicking session look like?
Yes. So for us music therapists, it will feel familiar. I use the term musicking because the purpose of our gathering is not the health and well-being, are not for health and well-being purposes for the participants, right? I'm meeting with them to collect data and to get to know more the topic of digital well-being. So I'm using the term musicking for that purposes, but I will go about that using, you know, our four methods, right? Like recreative, improvisational, compositional, and receptive. And so in preparation for my doctoral research, I did some workshops that I presented at some of our national conference, for example, at the Canadian Music Therapy Conference and at the World Congress this summer. So I led workshops where I use sort of examples of intervention I might use. So for example, we might listen to a song that's generated by AI and then have a discussion about what we thought about the song, you know, like what we think about the role of AI in the arts, for example. We might also do a referential improvisation where we use themes that are related to digital well-being. For example, my friend just ghosted me. Okay, so ghosted is when people don't reply to your text and just kind of leaves you hanging, or it's 4 a.m. and I can't stop scrolling on my phone. So sort of using these experiences that a lot of people will feel familiar that relate to our interaction with technology. Or we might also compose around a theme that's related to digital well-being. So it could be around experiences of cyberbullying or relationship with non-human agents like robots and those kinds of things, right? So there's like, it's very rich. And in my design, I start with a focus group where people will first kind of give me some ideas about what it means for them. And then the musicking sessions will be used to go and dig deeper around those themes.
Wow. This is so current and relevant. And also, like you said, in terms of thinking of your own son, you know, forward thinking. And I know Kathy and I, with our own kids, have certainly navigated this world for some time now. So
it's tricky.
It's really touching to hear that you're going to be exploring this. Yeah.
And I really feel like as music therapists, and I mean, as music therapists, I've done my own therapy and I've never, never been asked about my online experiences. And how many music therapists will ask their participants about that? Phew, right? Like it's not something we're used to. And yet like people have entire worlds that are like online, you know, like they have forums and groups and gaming friends and all these really complex relationships and experiences that we've not normalized yet that it's okay to talk about and that these experiences are real and that it's really legit to have feelings about that, you know, and that they might need help to navigate those, right? So I really feel like it's a professional responsibility, but we don't have the research, we don't have the evidence yet of like, how is it that music could be helpful? And so that's what I want to start, you know, like I'm really hoping other people will also pick up on this really, really rich and important, and I would say like necessary area for us to develop in the field.
Very much so. And you are a trailblazer in moving into this area. Okay, so you've sort of already made reference to these things, but I'm going to ask you another question to kind of tie things together. How do your research and professional collaborations influence you as a researcher, musician, clinician, and teacher? And then I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little more about a particular collaboration or project that stands out for you.
As you can see, I like to do many things. So I feel like everything is interrelated with everything, right? So when I dig deeper in my own artistic like practice, I feel like that makes me a better clinician, a more attuned teacher. And a lot of my collaborations have been outside of the field of music therapy, where I'm like the only music therapy on the team, which I'm sure others will relate. But I've been very fortunate that anytime I've been on these teams, my role has been really valued and my expertise has been really valued. So that's been really positive. But for example, with Landscape of Hope, which I've mentioned before, you know, I worked with people in art education and people from communication and sound studies. And there's like, in terms even of literature, there's like so much stuff that a lot of music therapists, we don't really go to because we don't know about it, because, you know, we read within our field and don't have the same awareness of that literature. So that's been one thing that's been really good for my research and for my teaching, is this exposure to the literature in other related fields. And then also, like, I think just the community work of, you know, engaging with youth around like these difficult topics through the arts and not only music. And so I work a lot with visual artists as well. And I have a new sort of research creation collective called Banal, where we look at how the extreme has become commonplace. Mm-hmm. And that's a really rich, but also kind of confronting topic. Mm-hmm. And we use the art to really go and question sort of, you know, how does that happen, right? How do we get used to so much extreme in our everyday life? Like, think about the pandemic again. Like, it was so foreign and bizarre to wear masks everywhere and to, you know, be constantly disinfecting our hands. And after a while, it just becomes a new normal, right? There's so much richness in those kinds of topics as well. Yeah, I'm not sure where I'm going. Like, see, that topic just like, it makes me go in my head. I'm like, oh, and there's all these things we need to think about. But yeah, like it's so rich. And again, like, I think my artistic practice is closely related to my research practice. And I think that feeds my teaching. And I think that makes me more innovative and creative in terms of what I do in classroom with the students. And I think I encourage students to be a little bit more daring as well in their research and really go for, you know, like innovative methods and using the arts, which is their language, right? To learn more about something they're interested in.
Mm-hmm. It's such an important message as well. What you're doing as maybe the single music therapist on these collaborative teams is advocacy as well for our profession and what we can be doing, but also for inspiring students to be seeking out opportunities like this as well.
Absolutely.
And Annabelle, I mean, you're doing so many different things. I know that we're just kind of touching the top of the iceberg here. And I know we said this in your bio, but Annabelle is also our French journal editor for the Canadian Journal. So, you know, that's a pretty big job as part of everything else that you're talking about. So I want to thank you for that and just everything you're doing to contribute to our profession and to move our profession forward and to be thinking in ways that are, I've already said this, but so creative and innovative and ways that we truly, like you said, haven't really thought before. So it has been a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for sharing so much of your work with us today.
Thank you for joining us on the Canadian Music Therapy Podcast.
To learn more about resources from the show, please visit beyondthestudio.ca.
Thanks for listening.